Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to the Dedunking Show. Ta-da! Sure. I'm going to be since I'm doing a lot of these live things lately, and I've been having a lot of fun. I've decided that I'm working on setting up a local podcast where I'll be filming in a local bar and stuff, and it's going to be all set up where I'll have guests, they'll sit in the same room with me and stuff. And it's right next to the Spokane Comedy Club, which already gets some decent guests and stuff. And so I'm trying to set it up basically. Well, it's already almost completely set up. I need to talk to a friend of mine that I'm going to try to weasel into doing some of the production and some of the other stuff. But yeah, hopefully pretty soon the live stream thing will be, I'll still do them, but a lot of the time they'll be with a guest in a big old room and everything's gonna be great. Hey there, Timmy, how you doing, my friend? Hey, Nuts and Bolts. Hey, Cole Cut It. Daisy Dog, Tristan, Missouri. How's everybody doing here? No Borders. Your first 3D print, was it a freaking Warhammer 40K miniature that you printed there, No Borders? If it's your first 3D print, it's either a sex toy or a Warhammer miniature. I mean, this is clearly what these things are used for, and in that order. This is, for those of you who aren't aware, all aspects of technology always go through their sex things, like the sex robot thing. VHS and Betamax went through this, film went through this, everything. When they first invented gunpowder, they were probably using it to blast the lips up and stuff. I guarantee it. That's a dark picture. But anyway, hey, thank you, Matthew. Can I come crash your live guest party from Portland? Well, Optimus, you could, but the deal is it's going to be when the bar isn't open yet. That's the whole idea. 65% humidity, says Timmy, and 98 degrees. That's how I'm doing. Fuck that noise, man. I'm all sitting in like a 65-degree area, feeling like a little warm. It's like, oh, man, I wish the air was moving more. Oh, thanks, Zenifia Dirty 20s. Have you played MTG? What's my favorite commander? Well, my favorite commander, honestly, is Garth. Garth, because he's got all the cool stuff on him. And the biggest one, everybody's like, well, Black Lotus. But the biggest one's Brain Geyser. I like to play a lot of decks that require, like, a massive card draw. And having a commander that can pop a Brain Geyser into my hand is kind of a huge deal. So I end up using that prick in most of my decks. Honestly, Commander is something I don't play very often because even in a lower bracket, I end up pissing people off because I played competitive Magic for so long that I just, all these happy-go-lucky kumbaya holding hands things is just a means to an end. I want to win the fucking game. So yeah. Anyway, I don't play nearly as much. I'm working on my pre-modern stuff right now, which, fuck me, I'm not buying cards for pre-modern. I'm trading my commander staples because Jesus titty fucking Christ, are they charging a lot of money? I am never, ever, ever going to pay $1,000 for a piece of cardboard, all right? That's when they truly become luxury cardboard rectangles at that point. 10th beer, impressive, or should I keep going? Well, you should pace yourself. This is the trick, right? And I got to point this out. I'm going to be doing a little bit of a promotional thing for Austin, which Austin's coming up soon. For those of you who aren't aware, I'm going to be down in Austin. It's going to be really cool because Austin's kind of like, for the podcasts world, Austin is a lot like LA was for the music scene in the 80s. It's like everybody and their brothers there. Like I was joking with the promoter for the whole thing, Robert. I was joking with him that here in Spokane, or in Sedona, I was a big fish in a little pond. But in Austin, I'm just one more dickhead with 100,000 followers. We're a dime a dozen. Excuse me. But the funny thing is, I'm going to be drinking there, going to the bars on 6th Street and stuff to promote the stuff and do a little grassroots promoting, which, on the one hand, the part of my brain that says I'm going to go get paid to drink has got like it's running around doing victory laps, right? It's holding up the green flag going, yeah. On the other hand, the reason that I do these things is because I pace myself. I'm not going to just show up and like slam beer after beer after beer after beer like Farva at the freaking last party on Super Troopers. Open bar, dude. No. You pace yourself. Yeah, it's like Adam Sandler's song, at a medium pace. So, hey, high humidity and 98 and 12. Jesus Christ, you guys. Austin's 9-year-old Tony watches from a stone. That was one of the best jokes that I'd heard heard on the that was on the roast, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure that was on the roast. God, that was funny. Edmonds, Washington here. So you're dealing with a little humidity, probably. I think Edmonds is near the coast. Rue Bate, how we doing? Edmonds, I'm Mount Vernon. Yeah, that's over near the coast for sure. When printing was first invented, pornography was also very popular. That's just it. Like this, that's what I mean. Like, think about the Venus figurines, and like that's one of the big hypotheses, is that these were just like a thing for teenage boys to be like, hey, check it out, dude. Go hide behind the tool shed. But all right, this time we're, instead of picking on somebody, well, we're going to talk about somebody that I have a degree of respect for. We're going to go through humid titties. We're going to go through some of the Land of Chems stuff. We'll start with his Red Pyramid video, because that's what people always tell me I need to go through. We'll start with his first one. And maybe, you know, depending on how you guys like this stuff, we'll go through these more and more and more. I've watched some of his content, but I haven't watched a lot of it. You know, you end up pretty busy. And let's be honest, Jeff is, you know, Jeff does everything like I do this right here. So it's all a bunch of 1 hour, 2 hour videos. And none of it's very succinct. And that's not a criticism of Jeff. That is merely a hurdle when it comes to sitting down and watching his content when I'm a busy guy. It's like, I've got 100, like I said in my video I uploaded yesterday, I got 101 people that are trying to be like, hey, dude, will you check this out? Hey, dude, will you check this out? And so something that takes an hour to get what I feel like I could get in a smaller package can be frustrating. But again, I'm doing that same kind of content here. And it does show a degree of knowledge or of, like Jeff's shooting from the hip and giving his answers with these things. So that should show that, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Right. Hey, Sherman. All right. Everybody ready here? We've given it a few minutes to get started. So, we'll go ahead and, I should probably hit that share screen button. That does help, doesn't it? Yeah. Look at that. Dun, 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 dun.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Land of Chem. I am your host and the author. My name is Jeffrey Drum. Thank you all so much for joining me again. I gotta admit, I'm pretty excited to be back to making videos again. I apologize about the hiatus between the previous video and this one. Had a lot of very, very exciting projects going on, some top secret stuff that I will be releasing very, very soon, and also had a return trip to Egypt 2 months ago in November of 2020. It feels like it's been years already since I got back, but not too long ago. And I was there doing research for the material that would be contained in the second book in the Land of Chem series. So the first one is your initiation into ancient chemistry through the degrees of the Egyptian pyramids. And then the subsequent books will have some more involved details, let's put it that way, because these structures are not straightforward whatsoever. So let's just get...
I have not read any of his books. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure some of you here have. So if you have read any of his books, it'd be great to, I'll pump your brain for information from time to time here. God, I bought his book. Can't afford my Egyptian visit yet. See, there you go, spam. Perfect. Oh, no, you're all right, Nick. Shit, brother. I appreciate your help when you show up, Nick. You're a big help. I can't expect you to be here all the time, man. I don't pay you. You kidding? And I don't keep slaves. My attitude about slavery is a lot like that old butterfly thing. If you love somebody, let them go. And if they come back, they're your slave some more. No, I appreciate your help, Nick, for real. Thanks, brother. Had to terminate some staff at work working a lot of extra hours. Fuck, then you're your own slave. Fuck that noise. All right, here we go. We're going to continue on. But yeah, anyway, for those of you who have bought some books, I would appreciate clarification and stuff if I get anything wrong, because sometimes I do that.
So right into it. Again, thank you so much for joining me. This is episode 4, covering the second degree, which is the second chapter in the book, on the function of the Red Pyramid. So without any further ado, let's get right into it. And of course, as always, for those of you that are interested, my social media plug, the website, www.thelandofchem.com. And of course, follow me on Instagram at thelandofchem. We can cover that more here later, but moving right along. Okay, so to recap, from episode 3, covering the function of the step pyramid. If you want to watch the video to get the full details, it's on the YouTube channel. Check that out. I'll try to put a link below if I can remember to do so. But long story short, just going to give a quick review of the material that we covered. All right, so the step pyramid, I believe, and as is contained within the book, that the step pyramid was designed to produce methane gas. So on the left side here, we have a diagram of the step pyramid, and you have three major components. We're going to keep this short and sweet. You have the...
Okay, I'll look what. Only losers read. Jeff made sense to me. What do these people need? Love these fuckers. I can't get behind Land of Chem simply because industrial sites are never designed with aesthetics in mind. Usually they're not, but they often are. I mean, there are, you'll find pump houses in a lot of American towns that it's just a little water pump house that is just a little house. You don't really, there's nobody lives there. It's just a little pump house. It's got the pump and stuff in it, but they've made it to look nice. Yeah. Oh, Sega Saturn or Amiga 1200. Well, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, that's a tough one, dude. Like, Sega Saturn's got a way cooler library, but it's so much smaller, even if you add the Japanese stuff. Like, Amiga 1200, the Amiga, any computer system, especially from back in those days, the amount of cowboy software that was coming out, it makes it just like, if I was to guess at how many games came out for the Commodore 64, I'd guess somewhere around 10,000. I mean, there's so fucking many of these things being made by so many people in so many little basements around the country. What a coincidence. I was designed to produce methane as well, says Nick. Yeah, see, let's now this is where this stuff does get interesting as to how well these would function as these different chemical plants is interesting. And it's one of these theories that it's frustrating that I've never seen anybody that knows much about chemistry that's got like a degree in it or anything dig into this stuff or to evaluate any of his hypothesis. And that is irritating. I always lament that we get a lot of knee jerking and that things get debunked before they get addressed. And if, you know, if science always operated that way, we wouldn't have the double blind experiment, or we wouldn't even have the single blind experiment, and we wouldn't have, you know, I mean, shit, what's the germ disease theory would have was so avant-garde and challenged prevailing knowledge so heavily that in the modern day and age, it would have a hell of a time. It'd take 30 or 40 years just to get even any sort of modicum of acceptance. All right, let's add this back and we'll see what we got.
The inlet shaft coming in from the northern side of the structure. Underneath the six-tier pyramid, you have the primary digestion chamber, or your main methane fermentation tank, however you want to call it. And then leading out to the south, you have your displacement shaft through which the decomposed substrate material is collected after the methane production cycle has finished. So again, you have this northern inlet shaft, central digestion chamber, displacement shaft leading out from the south. And that is exactly what you see here on the right in these diagrams of methane digestion chambers. You have your inlet shaft leading into the primary digestion chamber. You have your displacement shaft leading out of the structure. And then you have your mixing pit where your raw material substrate slurry is created. And in the case of the step pyramid, the raw materials were, of course, cattle manure, and you would have had agricultural scrap material that was collected after the harvesting season. And of course, water from the flooded Nile River was used to create the slurry, which was then introduced into the primary digestion chamber through your northern inlet shaft. The anaerobic bacteria that are contained within the cattle manure are the genesis for this chemical reaction. And as those bacteria start digesting the material, they create a mixture of gases from the raw materials, which is mainly methane, CH4. So you're extracting the carbon and hydrogen from the raw materials, and then the
okay, I don't have a problem. Hey, Dealey, how you doing? No, I don't have a problem with the idea of the Egyptians creating methane and stuff. I mean, that wouldn't be, you know, it's natural to, like, gather all the garbage in one spot. So you put all of the pig poop in one place or the cow poop in one place, and it's going to build up a gas. I mean, as the dude in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome famously said, methane cometh from pig shit. But, I the only thing I'm confused about when I look at that diagram is, holy shit, that's a lot of structure for a small chamber. You know, I don't understand why we need so much brick to contain the chamber within. Now that's again, I didn't haven't read the books, and we're going through the video on the fly, so I haven't watched all of his content, as I said, to begin with. So this is, you know, we'll see what we got. But if anybody's got any answers, you know, if they've read the books or anything, and he explains why they had to be so big, you can let me know. I mean, I understand that the large masses were meant to attract lightning in his hypotheses, but I don't see why that would matter. I mean, fuck, I don't know if I want my methane plant getting hit by lightning. The Egyptians were whites who got blackened, right? No, hang on. See, this you got to understand something here. We got to talk about this. This is a big deal because those archaeologists are fucking racist, and we need to really get this out of the way. You know, the gene that created white skin, the Caucasian looking honky, did not exist in the record 9,000 years ago. It's about 8,000 years ago was when we showed up. Now, this is a big deal because Atlantis was said to have existed 20,000 years ago, 15,000 years ago, it's supposed to have been destroyed 12,000 years ago. And this is why the archaeologists and the skeptics refuse to believe that Atlantis existed. Okay? The whole reason they refuse to believe that Atlantis existed is because they don't think you can have a culture without white people. And so when there was no white people, they don't think you could have had a society. So anytime that one of those guys tells you that Atlantis is fake, you remind them that they only believe that because they're racist. I guarantee it will advance the discourse, just like when they call us racist for asking who built the pyramids. All right. Anyway, I invented everything. Atlantis is the devil. Oh, live stream at the same time as Randall Carlson? I don't know. I didn't know Randall was live streaming. He probably stole my idea.
Bacteria are converting it into methane gas within the anaerobic conditions inside the chamber. And after that process is complete, your decomposed substrate material is again removed from the structure through the displacement shaft. So that is step one in the series of Egyptian chemical manufacturing structures, which are the Great Pyramids, the Step Pyramid, Red Pyramid, Bent Pyramid, and then onto the Giza Pyramids. Of course, the material contained within the land of Chem is that these structures were all used to create chemicals on an industrial scale. So the first degree covers the function of the Step Pyramid, of course, producing methane gas. And then we move on to the second degree, covering the function of the Step Pyramid, which is one of my particular favorites. Obviously, the logo for the book and the logo on the t-shirts is the Red Pyramid, the 45, 45, 90 degree triangle with two molecules on the inside. For any of you that are even reasonably familiar with chemistry, you'll probably recognize which molecules these are, and you can determine what chemical was being produced inside the structure. So again, let's get right to it. I love this picture. This is from the Land of Chem 2020 research expedition. So this is a very recent photo from our trip to Saqqara. And you can see over here on the right, the Step Pyramid. And in the...
Now, see, this is what I mean by no offense to Jeff, but God damn it, that makes it hard to go through. I'm trying to digest data, and now you're showing me a vacation pic. It's like, God fucking damn it, man. No offense, but fuck. I'm trying to... Give me this in a 10-minute package. But he was, you know, this is his earliest content, so I got to be nice to the guy. But this is why... we're doing this now. It's I've got no beef with Jeff's content, so I don't see me going after it hardcore. Rubate built the pyramid. Will inscribed name. Oh, dude, have Will inscribe his name there, or is it Rue gonna do it? Oh, and I got a sticker. Oh, yay! I am an American man. Rubate's not American. He's Australian. Now people try to tell me Australia's real, but I think we all know that Australia's fake. It's kind of like birds. Or the United Kingdom, or satisfying a lady in the bedroom. These are all things that can't really happen, that don't really exist. It's all BS. So anyway, let's carry on. But yeah, it's hard to, let's see another vacation pic. And again, this is some of his earliest content. So when I'm picking on him like this, remember, dude, you should see some of my earliest content. Even the lighting was piss poor. I was a fucking electrician, and the lighting was terrible. I mean, fucking come on, man. How sad.
The distance, the red and bent pyramids of Dahshur. So these structures are not only physically connected below the landscape via systems of subterranean shafts that move the chemicals from one structure to the other, they're also visually connected on the landscape. And when you're at the Step Pyramid, you can see the red and bent pyramids. Looking back from Dahshur, you can see the Step Pyramid to the north. And then looking in the other direction, you can see the pyramids of Abu Sir and the pyramids of Giza even further to the north. So they are, again, visually connected on the landscape and also connected subterranean with shafts that link each structure for the transportation of chemicals. So here's just another great photo. Again, this is from the 2020 Land of Chem Research Expedition. You see the Red Pyramid here on the left. And then if you look here kind of in the cloudy distance, you can see the Step Pyramid to the north. And so I just wanted to share this quote. So again, the Land of Chem is a fictional story about a young man's initiation into ancient chemistry, and he's being initiated into this ancient secret society called the Order of Chem that was responsible for the construction and operation of the Egyptian pyramids. And through each degree, he is given the true purpose of each structure. And so again, there's this fictional story that goes along with it, and I just wanted to share kind of a part of that fictional story.
That can be fun to do these kinds of things with fictional stories, but... there's also there's a little bit of a pitfall that can happen there too. You know, I don't know how many of you, probably a good number of you, are familiar with Loose Change, the 9/11 quote unquote documentary. Those guys tried to sell it as a as a fictional story to begin with. It was going to be a Da Vinci Code kind of story about this. These guys stumble onto the hidden bits of the 9/11 conspiracy, and none of the book publishers would have it. And this was still, you know, back 20 years ago when 25 years ago, when, you know, publishing a book wasn't as easy as it is now, where you're just like, hey, I'll give you money, publish my book. He has a very good video, but you have to mute it. Ouch, dude, that's cold-blooded. But yeah, anyway, the Loose Change guys are kind of funny that way, because it was like they had a packet, they had a product, they tried to sell it, the people wouldn't buy it, so they repackaged it from fiction to nonfiction. And there are parts of it that were pretty bad. You know, whatever you think about the 9/11 thing, when they take the I think it was a B-29 that ran into the Empire State Building, and they changed that to a B-52. Like, what? Okay. But yeah, anyway, carrying on.
And then a bit further in the presentation, I will share kind of how the technical details are presented within the narrative, because it's kind of two separate things. So anyway, the view from the platform was exquisite. The Red Pyramid, ablaze with moonlight, resembled the apex of a giant shining crystal rising out from underneath the ground. From this position, Aquari could still see the Step Pyramid to the north and envision the methane being produced there flowing through the subterranean shaft below the landscape. And that's kind of what you can see in that previous picture, is that young Aquari, our initiate, is watching from this platform, and he can see the Step Pyramid to the north, and he's envisioning the production cycle occurring and these chemicals flowing underground. So really my main intention with the fictional story was just to kind of paint a picture of what was really happening with these structures. And it's something that's kind of personally familiar to me. I won't go into detail on that. Maybe at a later date, I will reveal all the secrets as to where this kind of plot line came up. Again, here is another, move myself out of the way. I love this picture. It is absolutely spectacular. So the day we went to Dahshur, it had actually rained in Egypt, in Cairo and Giza.
Well, dadgummit. Well, hey, 757, how you doing? For you personally, bro, they're working on the ticket stuff. We're ironing that out. I guarantee you, there will be a way to sit next to me in Austin. And I don't know how far you are from there, bro, but it's like a couple of weeks from now that I'm going to be going down there I'd be going down there to tear it up on 6th Street to advertise and to kind of grassroots the Austin Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference. So, yeah, you can expect, like I was saying, it's kind of to podcasting in 2026. It's kind of what LA was to hair metal bands in 1983. I might have a little bit of fun there. Thank you for the other super sticker. I don't see what super stickers I get on this damn software. I like turtles. Yeah, me too. Jeff's early stuff was filmed before he got married. Miss Lex straightened him out. Yeah, this isn't bad. I mean, the thing is it's just clunky, and it's fine. It's just funny. It's like, here we are with another vacation photo, and he's telling me a story about it was raining that day. It's like, no offense, I don't give a fuck about it's raining. Give me the data. But, you know, here we are. Here I'm babbling about him babbling.
That night, the previous night. So it was a very, very unique and rare thing to see is rain in Egypt. So the day we went to Dahshur, it was super cloudy, still a little bit of rain coming down. So we got some really, really amazing pictures from that tour day. Yeah, this is absolutely amazing. I love this. You see the Red Pyramid here in the front and then the Bek Pyramid in the distance to the south. And if you look here on the north side of the structure, you can actually see the little entrance. And there's a little hut or shack or whatever you want to call it here at the top of the stairs. And you go in on the northern side here, and you'll see that in another picture. But just to give you an idea of the scale of these structures, they are absolutely immense. And it's really wild to see these things in person, and then to be able to climb inside them. And again, you immediately get the sense upon entering these structures that human beings were never intended to go inside there. Again, that they were intended for more of an industrial type purpose. And you really get that sense as soon as you go inside the Bent Pyramid. And it becomes very, very clear that this was not intended as a burial structure whatsoever. Again, it had sort of a manufacturing purpose as ever.
No, I'll just say a couple of things. One, I haven't been, I'll preface this, I haven't been to Egypt. So you can pick on me about that one all you like, but I haven't been there, so take that with a grain of salt. I will say that we have eyes that see things in industrial means, right? So, like, if we see a saw cut, we think power tool, but this wasn't that way 200 years ago kind of thing. So it's we always have to be careful with how we superimpose our own ideology over the top of things. And I'm not saying that he's wrong. Again, a lot of people have made these arguments in the past, and they look very mechanical. But again, I grew up in a time with gears and levers and chains. So, you know, my eyes see things differently. Wizards of the North says, I want to see the second Sphinx dug up. Cheers. Have a good one. Yeah, I would be interested in that, too. You know, I love it when they talk about these things. I just always want them to put their money where their mouth is eventually. Problem is, in Egypt, that's like a fucking 200-year ordeal. You got to polish Zai's knob a little. Nick McCarty says, your video on the ancient artifacts was awesome. I've been following that subject myself. I like money. Yeah, I do. I do like money. Thank you, and I appreciate it. Yeah, those alien artifacts are really interesting. They're really weird. And, you know, just like with Jeff's claims here on the chemistry side of the pyramids, it's like these things shouldn't be either ignored or accepted, okay? You shouldn't go into making a video about these things. It shouldn't be done with the intention of debunking or promoting. It should be done with the intention of evaluating what do we got. And that's where vacation pics frustrate me. But, you know, again, I'm sure that Jeff's later content is better and stuff. I should probably watch his appearance on Danny Jones. Maybe we'll go through this video. Maybe this just might take two times of doing it. But we'll go through this video and then we'll go to maybe we'll go to his content on Danny Jones, because Danny had him on like two or three times, like for like 10 hours of them discussing this stuff. And it makes sense. I mean, if this is what you really think, then there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover if he's really fleshed this out. And Danny's a good interviewer. I'm sure that he kept Jeff on topic. Yeah, so indeed true to Slob the Knob. As far as Zahi goes, I'm a tool powered by coffee and weed. That's what Schlumpberger says. He also says he loves the Masons. Randall Carlson is also a Freemason. Yeah, that's what he says. No, I'm not a Freemason. I'm a Mason for hire.
Evidenced by the intense chemical smell of ammonia that still remains in the chambers and staining all over the walls. There had been some discussion in my previous videos with Alan from the Sacred Geometry Decoded channel that the staining on the walls of the chambers and the smell is a result of the bats. Well, I can now conclusively say, having investigated four other structures that had bats inside it, including the Bent Pyramid, including Mastaba 17, the Pyramid of Meidum, a couple of other structures. The Pyramid of Meidum actually had some bats in there too. There's absolutely no chemical staining on the walls, and there is no smell of ammonia in any of those structures. So that is a complete fallacy that anyone claims that the staining in these chambers is caused by bats. It's simply not the case. And now again, conclusive evidence of that, having investigated several of the other structures in Egypt.
And this is exactly the kind of thing I think that would be interesting to check out, because, I mean, you know, there's street corners in downtown Spokane that reek of ammonia and that have for decades now. I don't know if they're still going to smell like it 10,000 years from now or even 500 years from now. I kind of doubt it. You know, that's an interesting idea. The idea of a chemical chamber still reeking of the chemicals that was processing thousands of years later does seem honestly a little out there to me. You know, I mean, I suppose if it's, you know, an isolated environment, nobody's ever getting in there. Very often, but yeah, bats, man, shit. I'd be more of the opinion that people pissing in there or something that would have created something to that effect. But, you know, again, what do I know? I haven't been there, but it would be very interesting to check out. These are the kind of things that we really need to be like confirmed by boots on the ground stuff, and that people that aren't there to just try to debunk it or prove it. Somebody that just wants to look and see if this is accurate or not, because, you know, if, let's put it this way, if there's a smell of ammonia in there, it probably wouldn't be very difficult to chemically prove that people were used to process ammonia in there, right? Hey, crazy. Yeah, I could reach out to Trevor. I could probably text him right now. I mean, I know I could text him right now. I'll ask him about it, see what he has to say.
I love this picture. This is, again, of the Bent Pyramid's northeastern corner. And, again, you can kind of get that imagery of the giant shining crystal rising out from underneath the ground. A lot of this fictional narrative comes directly from my experiences visiting Egypt and what I saw and what I felt the first time that I was there in 2017. And some of the pictures in this presentation are actually from that 2017 trip. This is another one from the 2020 trip. And, again, you can see here the little shack on the northern face that we actually descend into the structure from this little shack. And again, this just gives you an idea of the scale of the structure. You see here these little trash barrels on the left side, give you an idea of how big a person would be standing next to the structure. It's absolutely immense and really, really cool to be able to see these things in person. I feel very fortunate, especially considering the circumstances of last year that we were able to go in November, and it was really a magical experience. Why is this going backwards now? All right. So here we go. Again, I apologize. I'm moving myself back and forth just to get out of the way. This is a picture of Yusuf, our guide, and our friend now.
I apologize for moving myself back and forth just to get out of the way with something I said on my honeymoon. No, honestly, I just have to interrupt this every so often so I don't feel like I'm ripping off his entire content there. Hi, Dan. The pyramids had tech application. Will we find Maya and Aztec similar tech? Love your channel. But potentially. Thank you. Potentially. I mean, it's that's assuming that they were all sharing the same technology, right? I mean, it is possible that they all had different, you know, that they were all building these for different reasons. Or I'm sure you guys are aware of the cargo cults. You know, they're building things that resemble the technology that we have, but they don't emulate it in any way, shape, or form. They just look like it.
Egypt, man, Yusuf is the absolute best, and I cannot thank him enough for showing us the mysteries of the Egyptian pyramids and just treating us like friends and family, and we really felt that during this last trip. But this is a picture of Yusuf and me on our way into the Red Pyramid for the first time in 2017. So this picture is almost 4 years old now. So again, you can get the idea of the scale. There's this long stairway leading up. You go all the way up the northern face, up this little guard shack or whatever you want to call it, and then you descend into the northern shaft. But again, this is my first journey inside the Red Pyramid, which inspired all of the chemistry and all of the investigation that I was doing into the physics. It's all about simple physics, and particularly with this structure, it is manipulation of volume of water and soluble gases that causes a change in the temperature and pressure of those gases, which facilitates a chemical reaction series. And again, we'll get into that right now, actually. Okay, so this is a schematic of the Red Pyramid, and there are a few things that I want to point out here. The first thing being the reservoir around the structure. Okay, so we learned in the first degree that the pyramids of Egypt were designed to operate in conjunction with the annual Nile River flooding. So the river would flood. This is at the end of the harvesting season. So you have all of your agricultural scrap materials and your cattle manure collected to produce the methane gas. Methane production cycle begins. And you also have all of your other chemicals being produced during this Akhet season, the season of the flood, so that they would be prepared in advance for the upcoming harvesting season. So it was all cyclical. As with life in general, you know, everything operates on a cycle. And the same was very much applicable for the ancient Egyptians.
No, this actually coincides well with my idea on the Sphinx. For those of you who haven't seen me talk about that, I think that the Sphinx enclosure was dug to facilitate water. I believe that that rock that the Sphinx was carved from, that rock outcrop, was venerated as the primordial mound, the like first piece of dirt that came through the floodwaters. And I think that as the Nile started to diminish, that's why they dug out an enclosure, was so that it would flood and fill with water. And so this is a very similar idea where they were using water and filling up this area during the floods, which to me is interesting because we came up with these things independent of each other. I think the builders could go to the moon and beyond. Well, you see, Sherman, this is actually, I'm going to go ahead and put this on the screen because this is an important comment here. Sherman brings up a very interesting point. You hear people say all the time, well, you realize you just, if you have insufficient technology, you just throw lots of manpower at it and you can eventually accomplish that. So we'd just like to know how many people it would take for the builders to go to the moon and beyond, or if it would require a degree of technology. So anyway, Sherman, you're spot on. He probably believes that white people were around before 8,000 BC too. My God, my following so terrible. Atlantis was cosmic. I don't know about all that, but.
And again, I do believe this is the pre-dynastic Egyptians, because then we had that pharaonic civilization come along later. But again, even the pre-dynastic Egyptians would have had that similar cycle of the flood, harvesting, the collection season, and again, flooding again. So first and foremost, the reservoir surrounding the structure or this enclosure. There is some evidence that all of these structures or all of the reservoirs around the structures were 33 feet, 11 meters. And that is going to be applicable in the function of the structure. We're going to be talking about some Pascal's principles in terms of fluid dynamics. And we'll cross that bridge here in just a little bit. But just keep that in mind. The enclosure or reservoir surrounding the structure was 33 feet high. Now, here on the eastern side of the Red Pyramid, you see this little satellite structure, which is actually going to be your reservoir intake valve. So your reservoir would have been filled with water. And this structure on the side is, again, your intake valve, which allowed water to enter the internal structure and begin filling the chambers. So we've got that covered. And the three chambers inside the Red Pyramid are all geometrically similar. You have your first two chambers aligned north to south, and then your final synthesis chamber is aligned east to west. They are all geometrically similar in terms of having a rectangular lower half and then an upper vault portion that converges in regular intervals. So it gets smaller and smaller and smaller toward the top of the chamber. And again, that was meticulous engineering
right, with progressively reduced volume toward the apex of the vault, which again.
Maybe I'm just dumb and I'm missing something obvious here, but how the fuck is the water going up? I don't understand how the water goes up. Again, maybe I'm just dumb and missing something obvious here. Timmy says the Nile soil is so fertile they take it and dump it in the desert and start farming. Yeah, yeah, that was like the big deal with the Nile for a long time. Stars written on the Earth and City superimpose a cosmic force, physical sea Atlantis is cosmic. Well, maybe. But yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering how the water got up. I don't understand how the pressure is only going to push it so far. I mean, the fucking entrance to that red pyramid, like you showed it, like all that chambers and stuff are like up there in a ways. Yeah, I let's put it this way. Say, for instance, the entire area around a skyscraper floods. Say the skyscraper is watertight. You open up the door. The water level on the inside of the skyscraper will be the same as the outside of the skyscraper. Water pressure will not force that water up higher in the skyscraper than it is around it. That's my problem. The flood would have to be, 33 feet high. I'm seeing a little bit of a problem here. I mean, I'm not saying this is impossible. I'm just seeing that that the water would have had to have flooded half with the pyramid for this to happen. Now, if they have some sort of water wheel or pressure thing or something like that inside, it's possible. But I don't see how. Yeah, they would have had to have used a pumping system, and I don't see any evidence for that. But anyway, I'm just saying that part's confusing me. I'm just going through this piece by piece. That's all.
And was reducing the volume of the gases, increasing temperature and pressure to facilitate a chemical reaction. So I think that's all I wanted to cover on this particular schematic. So one thing you also have here is your northern shaft, which is going to be your northern pump shaft. And there's also some evidence that there is a shaft that leads out of this final synthesis chamber. They've done some excavations in that final chamber, which indicate that they were looking for a shaft. It appears to me that the shaft goes right out of the bottom of the pit. And again, there's some evidence that may be the case. So to recap again, well, I jumped way ahead here. Hold on, let me go back. Okay. So again, keeping this design in mind, you've got the reservoir around the structure, 33 feet high. You have your reservoir intake valve within the reservoir, which let the water into the structure. You have your northern pump shaft and then your outlet shaft coming out of the final synthesis chamber. Oh, maybe that is the next slide. All right. So nonetheless, I just wanted to share this picture. I think I might have mentioned this in the previous video. This is a picture of...
No, it is accurate that there would be like... It is accurate that like if you filled that with water and it was like filled with air and stuff, water would, you know, could hypothetically increase pressure, which would hypothetically increase temperature, right? It would definitely, from what I'm seeing so far, they would need some sort of means to pump that water. Now, that's moving water is not tricky. I'm not saying it's impossible for them to have had a way to pump that water up there. I'm just saying that I'm not seeing a means or a mechanism for that so far. Now, it's been a while. It would be interesting to see if the shaft that he believes exists there, that his theory kind of needs to have there, right? I mean, it's a chemical reaction thing, so he needs the second shaft that he's talking about. It would be interesting to see if they found this or not. Jeff's a reasonable dude, so I'm sure that he would be up for revamping his hypothesis if he ran into walls. And, that's exactly the kind of thing that could happen. You know, if you think that it might have been used for one chemical and then you find out that it could have been used for another based on the evidence, there's, you know, it's not pissing up a rope. Like I say all the time, man, I think people get way too hung up on being right. My theory is, it's like, dude, why, like, myself, I'm pretty certain that we, like, if you were to look for a lost civilization, I think that Easter Island is the place to search. I think that Easter Island is the place that if we dig in the right spot, dig deep enough, dig around it, we'll find some really old fucking shit down there. But, I can't prove it. And if somebody proved that I was wrong, I would say that, you know, I'd have to go with it. If you proved that I was wrong, I would begrudgingly have to accept it. It's just... you know, it's easy to get your ego involved in these things, easy to get your ego attached, but especially when it's, you know, I mean, this is Jeff's theory, right? I mean, he's pretty much conjured this one up. So, oh shit, what we got here? I require 33 pounds of pressure in my shaft. In very nice, very, very droll.
Of one of the original apparatus used to produce ammonia. And you will see here, there are some very interesting similarities between this apparatus and the chambers of the Red Pyramid. Again, let me get myself out of the way here. So you can see, this is the most important thing, is the configuration of the Red Pyramid. But you'll see here, this original apparatus had three different chambers connected by a system of shafts. And that is exactly what you have here in the Red Pyramid. One, two, three chambers connected by a system of shafts, which were used to link each chamber. And I do believe that the configuration of this original apparatus used to produce ammonia was designed to pay homage to the place from whence it came. Again, this apparatus could have been created in any sort of configuration. They didn't have to raise this upper chamber above the other two, which is exactly what you see here in the configuration of the Red Pyramid, that the third and final synthesis chamber is slightly elevated above the other two. That's exactly what you see here on the left in this apparatus that was used to produce ammonia. And again, the modern process for producing this chemical is basically the same, but we have higher temperature, higher pressure, using electricity, mostly to facilitate these chemical reactions. And one thing I'm not implying is that this ancient chemical manufacturing process is any way comparable to the efficiency or output of what we have today, right? The temperature wasn't as high, the pressure wasn't as high, the conversion rate wouldn't have been as efficient, your product would not have been as pure, you wouldn't have as much of a product. But again, the whole point is that it is possible, and that they were doing this, and they were producing the chemicals. Again, was it as efficient as what we have today? No, definitely wasn't, but it's still pretty amazing that they were able to accomplish this miraculous chemistry utilizing very, very simple physics. And again, that's one of the biggest just sort of revelations about the Egyptian pyramids, is that they encode all of this ancient knowledge and ancient science within, it's a harmonious composition of interdisciplinary ancient sciences. And I'm quoting myself out of the book, but yeah, so that's like a quote from the fourth degree or something, a symphony of interdisciplinary ancient sciences. But that's what
I don't think that it's I don't think that it's proven. I guess that's the best way of putting it, where he's you know, it would be interesting if that's what they were doing. It'd be very interesting if that's what they're pulling off. I don't see a lot of evidence. I don't see enough evidence to call it proven yet. Don't get me wrong, this is one of the most interesting theories on this stuff that I've seen. It is, it doesn't require anything too crazy high tech. And it would definitely, it's the kind of thing that the ancients would have been into if they were able to do it. But there is some of it that seems like this, the water right there. And then it feels like he's shoehorning it a little bit, where he needs an extra shaft there and stuff. And it's like, you know, you could show an image of three chambers side by side, but, you know, connected by hallways. But, you know, you got that in fucking castles and stuff, man. Yeah, some of the people believe that the Philosopher's Stone was made out of pee. It's all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah, ammonia would be used to make fertilizer. And it would be like a basis for other chemicals and stuff. I mean, again, this stuff's pretty interesting. It's just, you know, I mean, a lot of these things, in all honesty, they make ammonia a lot easier ways. I mean, that's, you know, if, you know, it's, pee on the, and thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the old, he's not worth a pot, he doesn't have a pot to piss in. That was somebody that, if you sold your piss to the fucking leather curing folk, and they'd use it for the ammonia to cure their hides with. And if you couldn't afford a bucket to pee in to fucking bring it to him, you didn't even have a pot to piss in. He banters in the, Dan doesn't babble, he banters and the fi. I babble that too. Well, you ask my son, he'll tell you that I babble, but he's probably wrong. What does he know? He's been hitting me with a fucking pretty funny one lately. It's like, you know, I'm a lot cooler than you, Dad. I'm like, really? How's that? It's like, my dad was on Joe Rogan. Was your dad on Joe Rogan? It's like, oh, you fucking little shit. I'd have beat your ass. He's funny, though. I'll give him credit. He reminds me of his dad by being a little fucking troll.
But they were. And again, they utilized this knowledge of physics to create chemical reactions on a large scale. Again, this was a massive civilization. It very much makes sense to me that they would have been in producing chemicals on an industrial scale to support their thriving agriculture and industry throughout the area. So let's keep on rolling here. All right, so to give you a little background on how ammonia is produced industrially today, the first step in the process is conversion of your methane via steam reforming. So the methane is being produced in the Step Pyramid. The methane is transported from the Step Pyramid to the Red Pyramid, and introduced into the first chamber. And again, this is your steam reformer, your primary steam reformer, where the...
Now, again, I might be a little dumb, but how are they transferring methane from one plate to another? It's a gas. And I mean, this would be tricky, as far as I understand. You have to control it. It wouldn't be easy, I would think. So I'm not saying this is impossible. I'm just saying this is the kind of thing that to me seems, these are the kind of thing that starts to seem improbable. It's like we would need this infrastructure we're not seeing. Yes, I have a doctor's appointment at 6:15. My doctor's texting me. My doctor's AI is texting me. Yeah, ammonia is also used for copper leach money. Fuck, the Romans use it to brush their teeth with, the fucking goofy bastards. Goofy bastards.
Water and the methane will react to produce carbon monoxide and hydrogen. So how does that happen? One thing, again, to keep in mind are these Pascal's principles, and the main one being that water will always rise to its level. It will always find its level regardless of the shape of the container that it is inside. So that's exactly what's going to happen inside the Red Pyramid, is that as the water from the reservoir enters the internal structure, it will only fill as high as the water level in the external reservoir. And that is where your northern pump shaft is utilized to help push, well, we'll get into that, into the function of the final chamber, but just something to keep in mind are Pascal's principles. And also the same principles that were utilized in designing a hydraulic press, the incompressible nature of liquids, that if you press on a liquid, you're gonna distribute that force simultaneously to all points within it. That's actually utilized in the function of the vent pyramid, but we'll cover that in a future video. So Pascal's principle. Okay. So looking at this, and let me give credit here to the ACIDA project, the original schematic here produced by Frank Monnier. Visit the ACIDA project website if you're looking to check out some pictures or some diagrams. They actually toured with Yusuf, our same guide. They're just an exceptional research group, and I give a lot of credit to them. And I always like to give credit where credit's due if some of these pictures are not my own, and of course this diagram is not mine. So again, let's remember that diagram depicting the exterior of the Red Pyramid. Remember that that external reservoir is 33 feet high. So the height of these first chambers is 40 feet. So the highest that that water level will ever be able to reach within the first two chambers is 33 feet. And then you'll have 7 feet until the top of the chamber. So that's just something to keep in mind. So step number one is begin to fill the primary chamber. So your external reservoir intake valve is opened. This allows water from the reservoir to begin flowing into the chambers. And I'm going to show you an old picture that you can actually see them here, that there are some holes depicted in this diagram. There's a hole here near the shaft that leads from the first chamber to the second chamber. There's a hole here in the floor on the southern side of the second chamber. And I believe those are your drainage shafts, and we'll get into that here in just a minute. So step number one, again, open up your reservoir valve. Water from the reservoir moves into chambers. And what it's going to do is start filling these first two chambers.
Okay. Now, I gotta step in and say something there. You can't have holes and pressurize this gas. You can't have any escape and pressurize this stuff. So these holes would have to have been... those holes would have to have been sealed somehow. One way or another, they would have had to have plugged those holes. Otherwise, the pressurization would not have worked. Would not have worked. You know, it's doesn't matter where you poke a hole in the balloon, the air escapes out. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, they quite possibly could have had slaves to go in and plug those holes and stuff. But... yeah, it's those holes would have had to have been completely stuffed closed and stuff. This wouldn't work otherwise.
And the first step is raise the water level to the height of the connecting shaft. So there's a connecting shaft that runs from the first chamber to the second chamber. And as you fill these first two chambers with water, water level will rise. It will reach the level of the top of that connecting shaft. And what you have done is isolate the remaining interior space of chamber one. It's essentially sealed with the water. So you're setting your initial temperature and pressure conditions within that chamber. Now, something to keep in mind, again, methane is a water-insoluble gas. So the water is actually going to act like a plunger. As the water level rises in the chamber, it is going to push that insoluble gas into the upper portion of the vault. Again, there's significantly reduced volume in this upper portion of the vault, which is going to increase temperature. It's going to increase pressure, which facilitates the chemical reaction process. So again, step number one, you're going to start filling up the chamber. Step number two is introduce methane into the chamber. And there is a small hole, or I call it the shaft termination, on the northwestern face of the first chamber. And I'll show that here in just a sec. I believe that is where your methane was introduced into the chamber. The methane is going to start to fill the upper vault section. And then step number three is continue to raise the water level. And the third tier in the chamber is going to be the indicator mark for that third step in the process. Again, first you fill the shaft to isolate each of your chambers. You fill chamber one with methane. Step number three, continue to raise the water level up to the third tier of the vault. And that's where you're going to start to see the temperature and pressure increase, start to, again, facilitate that chemical reaction. So what do you see here? This is the entrance to the first chamber inside the Bet Pyramid. And you'll see here on...
Well, see, and this is really fun, right? I mean, this is interesting as hell. You have to wonder how airtight stone is in a situation like this. I've talked to Jeff before. It's been a couple of years, but I've talked to him before. It's really interesting. You have to wonder how airtight the stone is. And then like some of the chambers, I mean, it's not in the Red Pyramid, but in the, it's the Bent Pyramid. That upper chamber is just all fucked up. It's just, those blocks are rough cut and they were like brought up afterwards and just like, or like cleaned up afterwards. It's not very, doesn't look like it would accomplish the same thing. Now this does look very clean, right? Those look very, like you could see this potentially being, you know, you can't slip a piece of paper between kind of thing. All right. I do think Egypt used hydro pressure type applications for various projects. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
From the left, it's actually been filled in with modern concrete, but there is a hole here. And I believe this is a shaft termination, your methane introduction shaft. And you'll see here that it's actually at the exact line of the top of the northern pump shaft, which leads into the chamber. And it actually is the same height as your connecting shaft that leads from the first chamber into the second chamber. And when you're standing inside here, you can see that there's actually a flow pattern of staining that leads up from this hole into the upper vault section. And again, you can see this kind of strange staining all over the walls. It's in very distinct patterns, which again, to me, are kind of indications of the flow dynamics that were inside the structure. But again, not the best picture in the world. I'll show you another one here in just a second. So again, those are your first three steps. You're filling the water up to this level here, which is the height of that northern pump shaft coming in, same height as the shaft leading into the second chamber. And then you fill the water up even more, up to the one, two, three, the bottom of the third tier in the vault. And I'll show you what that looks like now. Okay, so again, this is a picture showing that same northern face of the first chamber inside the Red Pyramid. And this is from the Land of Chem 2017 research expeditions. This is my first journey inside the Red Pyramid. And you can see here that there is a very unusual transition in the pattern of the staining immediately at the base of that third tier. And again, that was an indication to me that that was kind of that marker of where the water level was increased during that third step in the reaction process. So again.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I want to pull up the, what's that one? That pyramid. Yeah, I'm looking at some of these, the Bent Pyramid, massive vaulted one. Which one of these, is it the Bent Pyramid ones? It's all fucked up. I'll have to look. Here we go. The Meidum Pyramid. All right, the Meidum Pyramid. I knew it was one of them that was just all like, let's get an image that we can actually, Jesus Christ, guys, come on. Forgive me while I pull up this stupid ass image, but it's kind of important because, yeah, here we go. Here we go over here. And look how good I am at this stuff. All right, guys, you see that there? That's the Meidum Pyramid. Now, this is not, I don't reckon that you're going to be capturing any chemicals or, you know what I mean? It almost looks like a shitty ass imitation, like somebody was trying to emulate what they saw someplace else. If assuming that Jeff's hypothesis is right, these look really bad by comparison, like really, really bad by comparison, which is terrible. You would think that, you would think that they did better at these sort of things, but yeah, it's really not very good. I suppose, okay. No, I was going to say, I suppose it's feasible that they just went and defaced it, but there's places up there where it's too small for them. They've touched it up and you can't get to it. It's like, there's no way for them to have defaced it.
You're pushing that methane into the converging portion of the vault, significantly reduce volume, increase temperature and pressure, which is going to start that chemical reaction process. And again, you can see here just kind of the staining on the walls of the chamber. And over here on the left side, you can see that inlet shaft, which I believe is, again, your methane inlet shaft. All right, so here is a quote from the book. Again, let me move myself out of the way here. Again, the reason I wanted to share these two quotes, one so that you can see kind of how the narrative was presented and how I worked my own experiences in Egypt into the book to kind of tell the story. But there's also this very technical presentation of, again, the details of the chemical reaction process and exactly how these structures operated. So Aquari realized that as the water level rose in the reformer, it would act like a plunger pushing up on the gas, pressing it into the converging portion of the vault. The concentration of the molecules and their rate of collision in this uppermost section would be higher, improving the efficiency of the reaction. Brother Julius continued, the water level is raised a third time up to the eighth tier. The upper vaults within the chambers of the Red Pyramid were meticulously engineered with progressively reduced volume towards the apex. And as the methane is compressed into this area of the primary steam reformer, the temperature and pressure of the gas increase. So again, Brother Julius is conferring this knowledge, again, of the specific step-by-step operation of each structure. Again, he's the senior member of the fraternity who's initiating this young man into the secrets of the Egyptian pyramids. So again, you have this kind of fictional narrative, but then also these very technical details that are contained within that narrative. And again, something that's very personally familiar to me for a number of reasons. And we'll probably cross that bridge at a later date. And I don't know what's going on with the video. It seems like all sorts of different colors are popping up. The sun's going down.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, that's it's tough. That one's tough. Yeah, if the prototype doesn't work, you don't make the full scale thing. That's just it. The Meidum pyramid, it's let's put it this way, it would leak air badly, like compared to the other ones and stuff. Now it's possible that, you know, it's possible that he's right and that this is a copied type of thing. Yes, the evidence of extraction and transport is a big one to me too. I agree. It's honestly, I think he could well be onto something here. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen my stuff on the Baghdad battery, but the Baghdad battery, I'm quite certain, was not used for electricity. I'm quite certain that they were using it for just extraction of precious metals from wastewater from mines, right? Like the acidic, very heavy metal laden mine runoff. And then you would have the iron bar inside the thing, inside your jar, would get smaller as you built up precious metals. It would look like alchemy. It would look like you were turning iron into gold. So it seems to me like the chemistry side of things is definitely like this. It's a place to look a lot of times. You know, but I don't think I think that it would be good for him to find a chemist that would like not treat him, not be a yes man and not be an asshole, and would sit down with him and work with his hypothesis and try to iron it out and see what they got. No, not use it to counterfeit gold, use it to extract gold. Like if you take a galvanic cell and if you use for the electrolytic solution a heavy metal laden water that you take off of a mine runoff and say it's got gold in it, the gold will build up on the copper cathode. So when you're done, you will be able to take actual gold off of there and scrape it off of that thing. It won't be your electroplating something. I'm not talking about electroplating. It's a different process. It's similar. This is different. This is actually leaching gold right out of this fucking wastewater that no gold was known to be in. Right. Yeah, it could be used to plate, but it's using it to plate is more difficult than what I'm saying. What I'm saying is effectively it could be discovered this easily. All right. A guy works near the mines every day. He walks by this and these puddles. And one day he drops an iron pin into that. His belt buckle falls off. And then a week later, he drops a copper coin into there. 2 days later, he comes back and picks up the copper coin, and it's got a little layer of gold and silver on it. Discovered, just like that. It didn't require, and it's not about electroplating, because it's going to be an uneven, it's going to be a crystally looking buildup. It's not going to be like an electroplated buildup where they make a nice smooth layer. Hey, Giovanni. Yeah, alchemy, exactly. It's, but yeah, what I'm talking about is specifically, how they harvest metals. They do it through electrolysis because it's more efficient now, but you don't even need electrolysis, just a chemical way. It's a natural way a galvanic cell operates. So anyway, I think that very well that that Jeff's onto something here. I just think that a lot of the things need some refinement. And I know that a lot of this has changed since this video is like 5 years old. I know he lives over there now. He's got a kid and all this crazy shit. But, you know, I'm going through it piece by piece. So, that's, again, if somebody's read the books or anything and I get something horribly wrong, let me know, because I ain't trying to misrepresent the lad.
So bear with me on any technical details in this one. It's been a while since I've recorded, so I just wanted to get back on here and have some fun. And it seems like I might be able to get through this entire one unedited. So again, just a little quote. And this is, again, how Brother Julius presents the material to Aquari, so you have an idea of how those technical details are described within the book. All right, so I think I talked about this in one of my previous videos. Anytime I get super excited, I don't have any idea what to do with my hands. So I just throw my hands up in the air. So anyway, my victory pose, and anytime you see me doing that, you know that I'm just super stoked and I have no idea what to actually do with these things. So just throw your hands up in the air. All right, but this picture is from the Land of Chem 2020 research expedition to Egypt. Again, rocking the, gotta always stay on brand, right? But it was a really, really cool experience to be able to wear this shirt, which again depicts the operations of the Red Pyramid and the chemical that was being produced inside there, to be able to wear this inside the Red Pyramid and have pictures. It was just a really, really special moment for me. Again, this trip was kind of the culmination of a bunch of events that happened in 2020. And again, just feel very blessed. And it was a miraculous experience, as traveling to Egypt always is.
Not data, but you know, I get it. Yes, this will give him some views on his older videos for sure. Please, White Horse Hills, help see the process. No, I don't think that they thought it was an infinite. I don't think that they thought the Baghdad battery was an infinite source of gold. I think that they figured out that there were certain types of water that if you put in there, certain mud puddles that you could visit near the mines that would pull it out. I think that it was I think it was something they mistook for alchemy. You know, these things aren't hard to discover. Like, you know, they talk like discovering electricity is so impossible. It's like you realize if you have a tin vessel, just you get a tin pot and you're going to put some lemon juice on your salad, and so you use a copper spoon to do it with, you've just made a battery. Right, you get your copper and your tin and your electrolyte, and as soon as you could feel a little zap from this, doing complicated stuff, it's really easy to discover. So that the thing is learning a way to use it, and that's where I think that the galvanic cell, that the mining, the alchemy angle on the Baghdad battery seems like the most. Not only does it explain why we have the things we have, it explains why the pitting on the anode, which is consistent with a galvanic cell, we see that, but we don't see the buildup of other minerals on the inside of it like we would usually with the galvanic cell, because they were harvesting those minerals. That's my opinion. They were stealing the gold and silver and stuff that it left behind. So, of course, there's nothing left there. They scraped it all out. That was the whole fucking point. Jeff's videos on the White Horse Hills. All right. Yeah, we'll have to get to that one of these days. But I can only watch so many videos at a time.
Okay. So to recap, and again, I apologize if I reiterate some of these things over and over again, but I want to make sure that you understand the technical details. And it also helps me stay on track in terms of where the hell I am in this video. So again, step number one, you're going to fill the chamber up to the height of the connecting shaft. So the water level is going to fill up to here. Right. And again, this is going to isolate the interior space of chamber one and the interior space of chamber two. Step number two, you introduce methane. So the methane begins to start filling the chamber. Step number three, you're going to raise that water level up, and you're going to press that methane into the converging portion of the vault. And you can see here, again, this picture is very, very clear, the distinct transition that happens precisely at the bottom of the third tier. Again, there was some argument that says that this staining was created by smoke. A, you do not want to be inside a closed structure with an entire converging vault portion filled with smoke. You wouldn't last very long inside there. Also, this is not smoke damage. It's really, really clear when you go inside the structures.
You know, I'm crazy, but you know what they could do is test the smoke, test the stains to see if they're smoke or not. Wouldn't be hard. White Horse Hills is the beginning of the process, just FYI. Yeah, everybody keeps saying that I need to do the Red Pyramid one. This is the comment that I got on my thing, and I've been told this a number of times, that the Red Pyramid is the stuff that I need to start with. Like, if I'm going to go through his content through for 10 hours, we'll ensure that I'll start at White Horse Hills. But, like, everybody's – I'm not planning on going through and evaluating every little thing that Jeff's done. I mean, his stuff's interesting, too. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, you guys don't have any idea. The Pacific Northwest elongated skulls, I look into that almost every day. I've got probably an hour or so digging into that shit. I'm working on trying to find where Khufu's body might have ended up, and that's become a rabbit hole. Let's just put it this way. If I was to let my obsessions run wild, I would fucking go nuts right now, okay? So I kind of just tip my fingers in a lot of different things, and this is very interesting stuff. I do, again, I think it needs more stuff done. He has test results on all the walls. Oh, that's interesting. Is like in his books, or is it done like through a science paper, or is it something in Zai's private stash? Jesus Christ. No, that would be, I mean, I would be very interested to see the test results on that stuff, because again, these are the kind of things, these things aren't difficult to prove. Like, if this area does have ammonia residue all over the place where you can smell it, you should totally be able to test for it, right? Yeah, Wizard of the North says, I'm not sold on this pyramid chemical plant idea, not at all. And I'm not sold on it either. I think it's very interesting. Chemistry, basic chemistry is a good place to look for a lot of stuff, because it is easily discovered and appears like magic. So it's always, in my opinion, a good place to start when we're looking at things, right? That bat poop piss is a possibility. Should be watching a newer video, bro. Well, I picked the one that people kept telling me to watch, so.
And again, the fact that there's that precise transition right at the bottom of the third tier is an indication more of function than of anything else. So again, you're compressing that methane up to the third tier. The next step, as I mentioned in the quote, you're going to press it up to the eighth tier. And there's a very specific reason for that eighth tier, because as you reach the eighth tier in the vault, the water level inside the chamber has reached the height of the water level in the exterior reservoir, and it cannot go any higher unless you manually manipulate that water level. And we're going to see that here in just a moment. But again, that's why I wanted to mention those Pascal principles, is because, again, water is always going to reach its level regardless of the shape of the container. So you have 33 feet worth of water on the exterior of the structure. You're going to be able to get 33 feet worth of height of water inside the structure. But again, that can be manually manipulated, which is exactly what we see here in the function of the Red Pyramid. So you'll also notice, and I'll show this in the subsequent photo, there is a very significant staining pattern that moves from the upper portion of this first chamber, and it moves down into this connecting shaft. So let's get to chamber number two. Okay, so again, we have that methane compressed into the upper portion of the vault in this primary steam reformer. You're going to have an increase in temperature and an increase in pressure, which is going to cause that surface layer of water to begin to transform into steam, which is the second chemical ingredient in this phase of the chemical reaction cycle. So your methane, CH4.
No. You're not going to make steam. This is not going to make steam. I'm missing something here. Increase of temperature and pressure is going to have to be insane in order for the water to make steam. You would have to, yeah, no, I'm not, I'm not, I would have to see the science on that, because, you're not generating steam by, just, you know, putting some water where it pressurizes some methane gas against some stone. That's not going to create steam. I get that. His chemical reaction requires it to make steam in order for it to generate ammonia from his methane. Excuse me. So that's where he's going to take this. And perhaps they had some way of generating steam there, but I do not see. I mean, no, I understand that, like, you know, when you go into some very, very controlled environments, you can raise temperature, you can raise pressures to the point, or change pressures to the point where things burn and boil and freeze at different temperatures. It would seem absurd, but you're not going to be doing that with water and methane. Electric from atmosphere, maybe. Yeah, I don't. He's lost me right here. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'd be interested in checking it out, but this is definitely not going to. I can't say definitely, but. Let's put it this way. If this was Shark Tank and I was sitting there getting ready to write a check, this is the point where I'd put my checkbook away and be like, I don't know about all that, brother. Cause it this just don't make no sense. Steam cannot form under high pressures. Okay. Yeah. Methane and water in a stone vessel makes steam. I don't buy that. I don't buy that for a second. I'll look though. I'm always down to look and see what we got, but let's see. Methane and water in stone vessel. I know that's not going to work because. It's talking about how to purify the methane out. That's not what I'm wanting to look for. Mixing methane and steam requires a controlled catalytic environment. No, man. That's not accurate. That's not accurate. Sorry. Like you can't just mix methane and water and get steam. As a matter of fact, when they do that, it's 700 degrees to 1,000 degrees Celsius, I think they say, which means it's hot as a motherfucker. Yeah, 700 degrees to 1,000 degrees Celsius is what they're saying there. It could definitely use water and air pressure to sustain a pop. Yeah, I don't see... Could create steam with I needed to see some math on that. Somebody says that they're going to be able to make steam in this situation. I want to see some math on that. But anyway, what do we got here? Heat exchange and boiling points of gases vary, using some applications today, but not in these methods. Yeah, there's, I mean, yeah, I've seen the videos of like fucking hydrogen, or like I think it was hydrogen that they were boiling at like really really cold temperatures and shit. The thing is, again, it's like the pressure that they're going to be in creating here isn't an insane amount. So, it doesn't seem to me like, you're going to be able to, okay. Yeah. That we're talking about steam. So yeah, it what he's saying here doesn't make no sense. That's what I'm getting at. I don't see that working.
And it react with your water, H2O, to produce hydrogen and carbon monoxide. So hydrogen being one of your desired reactants, carbon monoxide being one of your side products, which will get rid of that in the second stage of the reaction cycle. So again, you have these high pressure gases confined within the upper portion of the first chamber. And then the next step in the process, after that chemical conversion is completed, producing your hydrogen and carbon monoxide, you're going to start to lower that water level. And what they did was lower it just below the height of this connecting shaft, which creates a small aperture leading from the first chamber into the second chamber. And your water is drained out of the hole in the floor in the second chamber. So again, there's fluid dynamics involved in the operation of this structure. But as the water is draining from the first chamber, it's also flowing out of the hole in the second chamber. So it's drawing the high pressure gases that are in the first chamber through into the lower pressure section of the second chamber. And again, those fluid dynamics, as the water drains out of the chamber, again, it's moving from the first chamber and draining out of the second chamber. So the movement of that water is also going to facilitate the movement of the gases into the second chamber. And I also believe that this damage here above the connecting shaft, it has something to do with the operation of the structure. This to me does not look like a man-made crack. It looks like something that was created because of high pressure or something of that nature. And
yeah, I'm not... I think his hypothesis is interesting, but I think he's giving a lot of credit to how much pressure that they're building up in there. I can't imagine it being creating that kind of pressure just from water pushing on methane gas. It's been a minute, so Dibble blows and go buy Sahi's book. LOL. He did a test on Danny Jones of this. Well, I'd be interested. I might watch, go through and watch some of the Danny Jones ones as I have time. But yeah, these kinds of things, like, there's a lot of things here that are very interesting. And I think he will be on the right path with the chemical stuff, but some of the stuff here, some of the specifics he's losing me on. Give it a few more minutes, about 15 more minutes, and I'm going to call it because I got to get ready for this stupid doctor's appointment.
Again, it's you'll see in this original picture that, oh, we're going. Hold on, bear with me. All right. So where was I? Okay, so moving into the function of the second chamber. All right, so you got that aperture. It allows high pressure gases to move into the lower pressure section. And again, the fluid dynamics, the water moving and draining into the second chamber is kind of what pulls those gases into the second chamber. And you can see here in the upper portion of the vault of the first chamber that the staining is much more concentrated on the southern side of the chamber. You will see the same thing in the second chamber, that the concentration of the staining is mostly on the southern wall. And then you see the same thing in the final synthesis chamber. There's actually very, very little staining on the eastern wall of the chamber and significant amount of staining on the western wall of the chamber, which kind of, again, is an indication that there was a flow dynamic moving through the structure and that the gases were moving on the southern side of each one of these chambers. And that's exactly what you see in terms of the chemical reaction process. All right, so this is the old photo that I was talking about where you can really see this staining pattern that moves from the upper vault portion through this connecting shaft into the second chamber. And this is pretty evident when you're inside the structure, you can really see it. It depends on the lighting conditions and how your camera picks it up. You can really see it in this old photo. Again, you see it moving. You can see that pattern moving from the upper portion of the vault, pushing through that shaft system into the second chamber. You can also see there's some wild staining on the lower portion of the walls that, again, are kind of indication of flow dynamics. You can see here that it does appear that there's some holes in the floor. And this is now all covered up with wooden planks. So when you go inside the structure, you're walking on wood. You can't actually see what's on the floor underneath you. So again, there are some indications that there are other shafts leading out from the bottom of these chambers. One of them, again, would be your reservoir fill shaft that fills the structure. One of them in the second chamber would be your drainage shaft. And again, there are some indications that there's a shaft leading out of the third chamber, which would be your collection shaft.
There is one other really, really big thing here. It's worth mentioning. It's rising Kadu. We didn't start the fire. The other thing that's really worth mentioning is that the trial and error to figure out how to set up something like this would be pretty massive. For example, like he's talking about holes that you've got for the water to drain out of, but there's gas that's under pressure, and that gas isn't going to not push on the water. So it's like you're going to have to have a spot. You're going to have to make sure that your gas doesn't go pushing out through that hole where you're draining the water out of and all this kind of stuff. It's a lot of effort. A lot of effort that wouldn't be the trial and error side of things can get pretty brutal. What if they were just smoking meat? That's a pretty good question, actually. When you can't see the process, you miss the potentials. No steam equals no knowledge of White Horse Hills. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what to tell you there. I'm not trying to be like I'm not trying to debunk the guy's stuff. It's just I picked a video that people told me to watch. Again, feel free to fill me in down there below. But I don't know what to say. This is what he's saying here in the video that I'm reviewing. So, I don't see how you're going to get steam out of that situation. Now, if there's something in the White Horse Hills video that explains how you get steam, by all means, let me know. But just telling me to go watch another video isn't going to do anything but make me rub me the wrong way. Fucking explain it, goddammit. Wonder if there's any way to combine his theory with the underground structures theory of the Italian team. It's possible. I think the Italian team's gotten too far out there. Oh, yeah, you're talking. Okay. So let me help you out here, screwdriver. What you're saying is that you think that the thing was struck by lightning and the lightning strike is what created the steam. Is that what you're saying? Okay. This is something we're going to need evidence for. This is something we don't, there are, according to Jeff, there are some iron structures underneath the thing. They're like some iron veins and whatnot. I get that, but that's not, we don't have evidence of these things being hit by lightning either in the record or like in the written record or in the main record. It's not like a thing. So anyway, yeah, was that correct that was you're talking about? You're talking about the thing being hit by lightning? Because, yeah, that's – I mean, I had him on my channel for 2 hours. We talked about, like, how he thinks the Stonehenge was there to draw lightning, and this was a way to – create fertilizer and stuff. So if that's what you're talking about, man, that's not a hard one. It's just you think that's good? I'll ask you a question. I'll just ask you a simple question. If you've got methane in water and you hit it with lightning, which is more likely? The methane ignites or the water boils? Really? Hey, which one's more likely? So methane's going to explode, man. But anyway, this stuff is interesting to me. I don't think that he's not onto something. As a matter of fact, I think that the chemistry angle is quite possibly the angle to be looking at this stuff with. But the invoking lightning part of his hypothesis, I've always had a problem with. And it's in this case. What? No, I didn't come to this review. You came to this review looking to debunk. You had the same thing when you had Jeffrey on live. I watched. Now, first of all, I let Jeff talk almost the entire time when he was on live. I barely said a word. I only kicked the tires on a couple of things that I asked questions on. I've said numerous times now that I think he's onto something here and that a lot of these things make sense to me. There are certain things that don't make sense to me. I came to this video to look into the topic. All right. So this whole, now I understand that if I don't agree with what you think I should be agreeing with you on, that you're going to think that I came here looking to debunk, but, that's not the case. I came here because I've got a lot of respect for Jeff. I've got a respect. Oh, shut up, Lane. No, I didn't. I came here to look into this. God damn it. That's so funny. People get all upset when you don't agree with them on everything. Hello, Kai. I'm interested in his hypothesis. I don't think that he has everything right, and there are certain parts of it that I have had problems with since day one. But that doesn't mean that it's not worth looking into. Now, if I poke holes in an argument, if I poke holes in something and that bothers you, you're probably on the wrong channel, because I will always do that. I've done that to Graham Hancock since day one. He didn't have a problem with it. He promoted me for it. But if that's too much for you, this is definitely the wrong channel for you, because did you watch the video I just made yesterday? That guy paid me money to evaluate his stuff, and I said that I think that a lot of them were hoaxes. Okay, that's how I roll. I don't fucking try to debunk anything. I evaluate things based on what I think about them. If you don't like it, seriously, you are totally in the wrong fucking channel. Hey, here's an unrelated pointless super chat. Oh, hey, thanks, Rising Caro. I muchos gracias, appreciate it. Look at the reaction. You poked the bear. Exactly, dude. Fucking Jimmy. Me and Jimmy Corsetti are buddies. I have debunked his stuff. There is probably not a single person in the alternate history community that you have heard of that I have not openly disagreed with publicly. It's not because I was going out of my way to debunk them. But if you come to me and have your, like I said, there was one point up until the steam thing, I was way more on board. That steam generation thing, I got a problem with. I got a huge problem with. And, yes, saying that striking the pyramid with lightning is going to create steam is no, absolutely not. You're going to show me some fucking data on that. Let's just put it that way. No, we would have a great conversation, screwdriver. We wouldn't have a problem. But the people that are like, oh, you're just here to fucking debunk me, and y'all fucking lick me where I pee twice in the morning, once in the afternoon, and directly after I take a dump. So, yeah, I do. I call them like I see them, and teams be damned. I met Dan once, and he straight debunked me, and all I said was good morning with the Dunker channel. Leave your feelings at home. Thank you. Yeah, we did meet 757. I still got a stain on one of my pairs of pants from where that vape pen you gave me blew up. I was overdoing it and sharing it with too many people, and it just. Initial charge, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I understand. Screwdriver, you're show me the math. I mean, that's just straight up. If you're going to tell me that this is kickstarted by lightning, if they're going to Frankenstein this fucking thing into work, and you're going to have to show me the math. Sorry. Not trying to be a dick, but I don't. Generating steam through limestone by hitting it with lightning. Yeah, no, man. I'm not getting. I it's gonna have to be. you got to just show me how to show. You got to put this all together, Chibi. Right now, it feels like I'm on Dead Island 2, and they're telling me that I need to pour water on this broken wire to attach it electrically to this other broken wire, because that's how electricity works, apparently. You know my email? It's on my channel, man. Dedunking the passage email. Everybody should know it. It's on my channel at the about page. But yeah, just send me the math. Just send me the details on how it works. Thanks, traveling fools. Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games. Compression is part of the deal. Yeah, I'm not misrepresenting Jeff's theory. I've been going through it painstakingly about it, one piece at a time. Jesus Christ. This is one of the biggest things that I do get frustrated about doing this stuff, is that so many people in this space are so emotionally stupid that they only see things one way or the other. It's you're either for me or against me. You're either for me or against me. Those people are retarded. And it's like you either belong in the Britney Spears camps or you belong in the fucking... the Avril Lavigne camp, but you certainly don't belong in the Pink Floyd camp. There ain't nobody with thinking that's acting like that. Thank you, 757. I appreciate that. Muchas gracias. Yeah, agree or else. Yeah, I don't. No, it's not misrepresentation. Sorry, Daisy. I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but no, I'm saying that he's had a problem on how he's going to generate steam with lightning. You got a problem on how you're going to generate steam here. So far, he said that it was just pressure. Now you guys are saying that lightning's involved. I'm asking how it's involved, because if you're saying that light, I've talked to Jeff and he talks about lightning striking the pyramids. If lightning striking the pyramids is his mechanism for generating steam, he's going to need a whole fucking lot more than just the assertion to get me to sign off on it. It isn't complicated, man. I am a skeptic. I'm not a cynic. You fucking show me the evidence, we'll talk. But if you just assert that I should agree with something, I should accept something because you said it, well, then, fuck off with that. I got nothing to say. A newer video might resolve some issues. Yeah, I might just go through Danny Jones's stuff next time. I don't know. That's we'll see. Because this kind of thing, like, let's put it this way. Being accused of misrepresenting somebody else that's in the same community that I have respect for is going to piss me off. Basically, it's going to make me feel like you just tuned in and watched me for about 5 minutes or only listened to one thing that I had to say. But, I mean, it's like lightning doesn't strike in 1 year. Yeah, lightning doesn't strike every year. It certainly wouldn't be something they could bank on. That's for goddamn sure. There's a lot of these aspects of it that I think probably a lot more mundane things. It's honestly honest, you're completely a capacitor in the wet pyramid. There is no steam. The process is repeatable. Wait, what? Hang on. I honestly honest, you're completely a capacitor in a wet pyramid. I don't. Okay. Yeah, I'd just like to see that repeated. This one right here. It isn't lightning. It's ions from the ionosphere, convergent capacitor in a wet pyramid. There is no steam. The process is repeatable. I don't, that doesn't even sound like it make any sense at all to me. A wet capacitor from ions in the ionosphere. I mean, okay. You know, I've seen a lot of these things here, a lot of electric pyramid stuff, and they always seem to kind of fall short, in my opinion. They always tend to be when you start invoking electricity in the pyramid, you're gonna stone doesn't conduct electricity, so you're aware. But granite doesn't conduct electricity. No amount. If you poured lightning down one side of a granite stone in the Great Pyramid, on the other side of it, you wouldn't get a half of a volt. Okay, you pour lightning. Granite will just suck that shit up like a sponge. Old man builds tests, Stan. I'm betting he's on point. Well, yeah, that's cool. It's I would be interested in seeing it, but I would be interested in seeing it, but yeah, the the electric pyramid stuff, let's just put it this way. Every time that I've ever seen anybody do any of this stuff, they have to ground, they have to insulate their pyramid from the ground, for fuck's sake. It's the thing. Yeah. Anyway, it is, like I said, about time for me to get going. This is just, it is always fun. And it's always funny to see how upset people get. How do they charge their phones if the pyramids were not power plants? That's exactly a good question. Maybe they had themselves a version of a Tesla back then. This is possible, you know. If I'm not opposed to these ideas of ancient high technology and stuff, but like the idea of the pyramids being an electrical device or being a power plant or something like that, you really got an uphill battle with me. Sorry, Raizu. Thanks, screwdriver. No, it's really going to be an uphill battle with me because, I mean, I worked with electricity a lot, and like just right off the bat, the damn thing's grounded. You're not going to be able to harness the piezoelectricity from the way the thing's set up. It's just, there's just so much. There's so much that doesn't work with it. Okay. There's just so much that doesn't work with it. Does lightning strike, say, El Capitan Mountain? Does all this produce ammonia in this natural instance? Never heard anything about this. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. It activates the Emerald Tablet, Ark of the Covenant, and place in the step pyramid strike. Let's be honest here. Giovanni, you're having some fun now. Excuse me. All right. Yeah. Meat smoker, cheese maker. Pyramids used to sharpen razor blades back in the 70s. You could buy a thing to shove your razor blades in a pyramid, and then they would sharpen. Yeah. Back in the day, things, you know, there's a lot of that stuff. You still, like, you buy a pyramid to put your bananas in, and they don't spoil as fast or whatever. Yeah. I don't know about all that. You know, the magic shapes on the one hand sound silly. On the other hand, we do know that fractals, they make our cell phone antennas fancy. So those are kind of magic shapes. And, you know, I'm not opposed. Again, I'm not opposed to a lot of stuff. I just, you got to have to show me. You got to get me there. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can get electric fences for gardening and stuff. And another effect of trying to attract lightning strokes on fertile land and where you live. Now, see, that's possible. But, you know, there's a difference between an electric fence and a lightning strike. I mean, you know, there's a huge difference between the two. I once pissed on an electric fence and my pecker's still there. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if I pissed on a lightning bolt, I'm going to be little on the trans side of town nowadays. Anyway, thank you guys so much. Try not to be too upset. Yeah, I talked to him about this side of it, where he talks about, yeah, how these different things were, but that's the scale I don't jive with, but I would want to be rubber-soled shoot. Thank you very much. If I'm going to be struck by lightning, I don't want to be grounded. I just want to be one with the universe for that split second. Thank you, Mr. 757. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate you guys coming here to have these conversations with us. And remember, we don't have to agree on this stuff. This is really important, especially when we end like this. It's really, we don't have to agree on these things. We're not a bunch of fucking archaeologists that have to agree on a peer-reviewed, like, a consensus in order for us to advance our blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no problem, Daisy. You're fine, too. We don't have to be like that. In fact, our strength comes from us learning different things. But, yeah, just remember that, there's no reason to make it personal. Because in case you didn't notice, man, like, I'm all chill about this stuff. But the second you start fucking accusing me of stuff, dude, I'm gonna get ugly quick. Like on the job site, if you say, man, I think that circuit, you might have made a mistake over there, I'll go take a look at it. If you say, man, you fucked that up over there, you idiot, fucking check your lunch before you fucking eat it, dickhead. So anyway, thank you guys so much. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I'll be doing this here in the next couple of days. I'm hopefully going to be doing a live stream with a video game guy that I have a lot of respect for, a younger dude. So with any luck, I'll be doing that on Wednesday. And in the meantime, yes, science will progress with people talking / debating 757. That is exactly how we've got to where we are now. It's funny, like Flint likes to make, well, you guys sound like a bunch of college students sitting around and being just like, I don't know, man, what if? And it's like, what the fuck? How the fuck do you think we got to where we are now, man? A bunch of people sitting around asking questions. So, oh, thank you, Nick. Yes, I dibbled dribble. All right, you guys have a great day. I'm clicking the end stream button. Goodbye.